This is Mark Mullinax, and you are listening to the Forever Free podcast, Power for the Peaceful, a class on Taoism's primary text, Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, as translated by me in Tao Te Ching, Power for the Peaceful. Today, verse 41, finally, yin and yang.
When you listen to the ground and you put your roots down, you can hear what she says if you're listening. When you listen to the ground and you put your roots down, you can hear what she says if you're listening. The sweet sound of the river as she moves over the stones. The same song that the blood in your body sings as it weaves around your bones. When you're listening, when you're listening, are you listening?
This chapter 42 demonstrates the interplay of energy, of yin and yang, by showing how low and high, winning and losing, destruction and self-destruction reverse themselves, each returning into its seeming opposite. Ursula K. Le Guin, commentary on verse 42 in her Lao Tzu Tao Te Ching.
Welcome back, all. Great to have you aboard this time. Our reader this week is Rebecca Askew, who introduces herself this way.
My name is Rebecca Askew. I practice minimalism, which means that I decide what is important to me, and then I attempt to let go of everything else. I try to apply minimalism to my stuff, my commitments, my relationships. Reading the Tao Te Ching focuses my thoughts.
Don't miss it, or you'll blink. Today's verse contains the one and only direct reference to yin and yang. It's in just one sentence of this verse, the fifth of this 10-sentence verse, a verse which Rebecca will now read.
Verse 42, Foundation of Teaching. Tao births unity. Unity births complements. Complements birth triads. From these come all things. Carried forward by yin and embraced from behind by yang, all things increase and decrease in harmony. People hate most being solitary, desolate, and hapless. Royalty and nobility rarely see these problems. When your fate may be only to gain by losing or lose by gaining, I only pass along this revered and well-known lesson. Tyrants and the violent are unnatural. They die as they have lived. This is the foundation of my teaching. Begin here.
Part 1, Cosmology. Verse 42 begins with cosmology, or a kind of mythical creation, metaphysical story, but one with few details. It reminds one of the Big Bang or its downstream results. The Chinese literally reads this, Tao life is one. One life becomes or is two. Two lives become three. Three lives become the myriad or 10,000 things. So, there was first one thing or a unity. From one comes complements, or the sense of two-ness. However, this two-ness is not the strict and artificial separation of things into warring dualities, where this complementarity or two-ness of the one starts fighting the civil war among itself. No, many times already we have seen this teaching as we slowly walk through Tao Te Ching. From two-ness comes triads. How fascinating. Perhaps this is the chemistry of yin and yang, whose fruit is this triad or third thing, like balance. That is, harmony comes from a most dynamic equilibrium within and among the yin and the yang. These two produce a third thing or quality, that rhythmic or active condition we experience as harmony and balance. This one teaching should interrupt and stop cold the civil warfare of our hard either-or dualisms. But from this triad, all things come. In short, Let me put it quickly. The way births the one. The one births difference, but not hierarchy. Difference gives birth to a third thing, harmony. Harmony gives birth to everything else. This is no modern math lesson. This is not some quantifiable mechanical process. It is a math that includes more than the seen, more than the measurable. It contains mystical and imaginary values charged with pulsing energy. For example, what's not being talked about is our familiar model of cell division. You know, one produces two, two produces four, four becomes, produces eight. The mythic nature of these lines in Tao Te Ching, in these first few lines, gives us a metaphysical, a spiritual explanation of how all phenomenon, the 10,000 things, emerge from the no-thingness of Tao. It is this dance of counterparts, of energies both lesser, yin, and greater, yang, that function as the midwife to all phenomena and manifestations. The best way I can explain it is like this. Unnameable, one, Tao, gives birth to its own midwife, a yin-yang principle which both assists and is integral to all creation. Result? Tao's metaphorical thumbprint can be found in or on all the world's phenomena. How do we know of Tao? One way, by right relationship to the 10,000 myriad things. I don't feel that Lao Tzu intended for these first few lines to be interpreted that literally. He's not into writing some science textbook. And whatever it is that we call in Taoism creation, things started to appear, one after the other, in an orderly succession determined by Tao's processes. Soon, however, from the one, there were soon 10,000 things. But every single one of these things have their root, their cause, and their destiny in Tao. But however we interpret these lines, this chapter, this verse, contains some of the most interesting theoretical and philosophical material of the entire Tao Te Ching. Everything emerges out of nothing, first as a cosmic unity, then as the differentiation between opposites, yin and yang, light and dark, positive, negative. And from this third something is born. Dynamic harmony. Some Westerners observe some resonance with the Christian doctrine of the Trinity here, that in the one, the two, and the three, there's this cosmic dance reminiscent of the way Christian theologians have described the Trinity. On the one hand, it is important to avoid anachronism or Christianizing ancient Chinese concepts, but on the other, a wild mystery like this in verse 42 could use as many spiritual metaphors or mystical stabs at understanding as possible. So, find yours. Let's see if two other places in Tao Te Ching can help explain how all this happens. The first is in verse 25, where we see a kind of reverse creation process, or going from the micro to the macro.
Know your interconnections. Human beings come from Earth. Earth's patterns entwine with heavens. Heaven's root in Tao. Tao's blueprint is nature itself.
The second is from verse 4.
Verse 4, without origin. Tao presents as empty, dark, and complete potential, the inexhaustible womb of everything. How very deep is this emptiness? How ancestral? Tao blunts every sharp edge. It entangles every knot. Its brilliance merges deep in the dusty world, beyond our fat-fingered words and ways to frame it. So profoundly hidden, still, and clear, it hardly appears, but that is the way it is. I have no idea whose offspring it is. Consider it the ancestor of the gods.
When you're listening, when you're listening, are you listening? When you're listening, when you're listening, are you listening?
Part 2, Yin and Yang. We do have our first, and get this, our only direct reference to yin and yang in this verse. This single reference is part and parcel of the creation story of Taoism. One of our best metaphors or symbolic representations we may employ here is to take a look at a coin. It's easy to see its unity of opposites that Tao references. The heads is on one side and the tails is on the other, but they're inseparable. The coin's two-ness in its sides, in both sides, make a whole reality of the coin. A coin with just one side is unthinkable, right? A coin with two sides fighting for control and dominance is likewise foolish. And yet, our human minds have the greatest difficulty comprehending, or maybe accepting, how all things, like a coin, are the blending of the generative forces of the two, the yin and the yang. The entire fabric of the universe pulses rhythmically with dynamic yin and yang interreactions. However, forgetful as we may be, we are instinctively driven to choose sides, good or bad, good without bad, health or illness, health without illness, life without death. These are fantasies, and Tao is no conjurer of cheap fantasies. Taoism is a most realistic curriculum for the ups, the downs, and the sideways of life. Nothing is alien to it. Yin and Yang prepares for the plenty and the poverty, the happiness and the sadness. Neither yin nor yang is an ever or forever static energy. Everything includes, embraces, and integrates the shadows and energies of the one into the other. Only thus integrated can anything or anyone be considered a whole, a lasting whole. Expressed negatively in Taoism, the way to have a shortened or less healthy life is not to integrate yin or yang.
Our world hangs like a magnificent jewel in the vastness of space. Every one of us is part of that jewel, a facet of that jewel. And in the perspective of infinity, our differences are infinitesimal. We are intimately related. Fred Rogers, Commencement Address, Dartmouth College, 2002.
I will show the actual characters for yin and yang in the show notes and in the YouTube version of today's episode. Within these two characters are the primary radicals for moon, yin, and sun, yang. Now, the earliest Chinese characters for yin and yang are found inscribed on divination artifacts like oracle bones from as early as 14th century BCE. In these inscriptions, yin and yang simply explain natural phenomena, such as weather conditions, especially the movement of the sun. Sunlight happens during the day, yang, and a lack of sunlight occurs at night, yin. According to a very early 100 CE dictionary of Chinese characters, yin refers to a closed door, darkness, and the south bank of a river, or the north side of a mountain. Yang refers to height, brightness, and the south side of a mountain. Such ancient meanings of yin and yang arose out of the daily life lived experience of early Chinese, where farmers depended on sunlight for lighting and their daily life routines. When the sun came out, off to work they would go. When the sun went down, they would return home to rest. This sun-based daily rhythm evidently led to a conceptual, even spiritual claim. Yang is arising and yin is retirement.
I am apart. I shall be discontented with none of the things which are assigned to me out of the whole. For nothing is injurious to the part if it is for the advantage of the whole. Marcus Aurelius, Meditations.
In the yin-yang symbol, there are these two tiny circles, one of light, one of dark. Consider these two as porous portals, or circular doorways, into the unexplored energies and vital parts of ourselves, and thus our way home. Each is a path that winds its way through our vital but perhaps neglected or unconscious parts of ourselves. Into these portals we can safely go, though, for this universe, as created and described a few minutes ago, is built for a justice that lies in Tao's unavoidable tendencies toward fulfillment and wholeness. And this includes ourselves, you know. However, we can forget our resource-rich origins. And when the thinking brain makes boundaries where there are none, these porous, circular openings get filled in, blocked up. When we forget, and when we place our alien, artificial pinch points into the creative processes, then we may feel we have no recourse but to think in strong either-or dualisms. Thinking in such strong dualisms is the beginning of all fundamentalisms and fascisms. When we feel just one narrow view, like the kind if you were to look at the world all day long through a straw, when you look at just one narrow view and we feel that view is the only, the one and only correct view, the only conscious one, then we operate as a half, not as a whole. Fundamentalisms are dangerous because they convey a single idea as if that idea is the only one. However, these tiny little circles in the yin-yang symbol keeps our imagination alive. How to engage these circles? Well, develop an imaginary conversation with them. What do you want? Why are we seeing you? Are you here to befriend us? How will you complete us? Can we find health in you? Yin is the sistering presence that unites harmony. Yang is the brothering presence that balances. Living in the yin and the yang is our true place, our psychic centers, our truest homecoming. It's a place where our cracks, fractures, and incompletes get healed. So back to our creation story. The concept of yin and yang is Taoism's way to convey a necessary two-ness. Yang energy and yin energy together represent, if you will, nature's spontaneous and archetypal symmetry, a symmetry that implies a two-ness to things, an interdependent two-ness interpenetrating each thing without conflict, like a magnet with two poles. And it would not be a magnet with just one pole, right? So the single dynamic balance of the universe is one based upon appearances of the world that, from first to last, inwardly depend upon both a non-harmful form of opposition and a radical unification of such oppositions. That is, they're both commonly rooted in Tao. In the language of Buddhism, a similar insight is expressed in the Heart Sutra, as Rebecca will read now.
Form is no other than emptiness. Emptiness no other than form. Form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness is exactly form. Sensation, conception, discrimination, and consciousness are also like this.
Tao and the 10,000 things arise in perpetual interdependence. Each particle depends upon the other. The whole is not whole until all its parts have their day and have their say. So in the text, we see yang as close to us as the image of it being on our backs, and yin is as close to us as being in our arms. This verse literally says,
carried forward by yin and embraced from behind by yang.
The next line literally say these two blend or merge or combine their energy in order to create harmony.
All things increase and decrease in harmony.
So in our summary of our verse so far, we inhabit this very metaphysical creation story in which Tao, the emptiness, is the source or womb of everything. Everything in the universe is created from this emptiness through yin and yang interaction. Yin and yang are the two basic energies that make up everything. Yin and yang are differing, relating, co-creating, codependent, and co-interdependent. Tao, the emptiness, contains infinite possibilities of energy and matter. Everything in the universe consists of both yin and yang elements. The vital force, qi, arises from the constant, ever-shifting interplay between yin and yang.
When you're listening, Are you listening? When you're listening, when you're listening, are you listening?
Part 3. Consequences of ignoring yin or forgetting yang. The next lines in this verse speak of possible consequences of regarding everything as a standalone, single, or as separated parts of a harmonious, balanced whole of Tao.
People hate most being solitary, desolate, and hapless. Royalty and nobility rarely see these problems.
This verse is almost pastoral. Lao Tzu recognized that in our daily life, if forgetful of our roots in Tao, or neglectful of yin and yang interpenetrating all, we turn into and become what we hate. Being solitary, desolate, hapless, problems that royalty and nobility in their privilege rarely see as problems. But at our core, we know when we are off-balanced, not whole, not harmonious, life just don't make sense. Life doesn't make sense when we ignore some latent yin energy or quiet resource from within. Or maybe there's this social public action needing our attention, and we'll be uneasy until we get that taken care of. Focusing on just our privilege, do we ever give a thought to our poverty? Focusing just on our maleness or just our femaleness, do we ever get a thought to shake hands with the other? Focused just on our color or economic position, do we ever contemplate the spectrum of color, visible or not, or the economic positions of the invisible people around us? You see, this creation story of Tao with its yin and yang calls to us to be cognizant of our neighboring humans, neighboring species, neighboring particles of creation, to recognize the essence of neighborhood, or the golden rule. What we do to the one or the single, we do to the all, including ourselves. The next lines continue this pastoral teaching.
When your fate may be only to gain by losing or lose by gaining, I only pass along this revered and well-known lesson. Tyrants and the violent are unnatural. They die as they have lived.
That is, when linked and synced with Tao, one's fate is forged by losses that seem gains and gains that appear to be losses. Wise one will recognize that there's no point in time or space where you reach your final end. Bad days end in relatively good ways, and good days can end darkly. And then tomorrow, the reverse could be true. The point is not to rush to judgment, but to reframe our lives as interplays of good and bad, yin and yang. Our so-called diminishments may be seen against the backdrop of how a negative can be reframed as a positive. Haste, assigning good or bad, makes for waste. More can actually be less, and less can be understood as more. If one's learned habit is to insist that more is better, one just might create monsters of unreal expectations. Knowing when to stop, when to retire, sometimes takes a lifetime or longer to learn. Finally, our verse ends in a wise proverb.
I only pass along this revered and well-known lesson. Tyrants and the violent are unnatural. They die as they have lived. This is the foundation of my teaching. Begin here.
This is an example of the karmic harvesting of bad seeds. What happens when one acts from only yin or yang only? Violence and tyranny, precisely because they do not last forever. So only dragon's teeth. Look at any given war, starting with the wars on the news today. One side invades, another side defends, then the defenders and the invaders tend to trade places. Why? Because they take their cues and models for how to behave only from their wounded places, not their healed parts. You see, it works like this. In today's war logic, if I get hurt, I am then justified to strike out in similar fashion, but with a little bit of extra just for them. which then boomerangs back and forth and back and forth in ever-increasing cycles.
Live by the sword, die by the sword. Jesus in Matthew 26:51.
Again, one more time, violence and tyranny are not natural processes of Tao, not balanced in yin and yang, and so they become one more failed page of history to write. History shows us only the truth of this line from verse 42. So when will we ever learn that leaders leading from violence never last? And Tao's cosmology, the origin of their failure, is their not taking account of both yin and yang, but rather depending upon one. As Tao Te Ching reminds us, this is a revered and a well-known lesson. Its truth lies in a line from Martin Luther King's speech called Loving Your Enemies. Quote, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." Unquote. So let's summarize. In the beginning, there was only the one Tao, and then it doubled into yin and yang expressions, a third thing. And these third things splits everything into what is. If we want to live healthy lives, we follow the balance among yin and yang. This helps us to reframe gains and losses as a balanced equilibrium. But to focus on just one part, or try to freeze this fluid equilibrium, we're just preparing for violence. And now, it's time for Rebecca's question.
For one gains by losing and loses by gaining. Now that brings up a question for me. This quote seems to be a universal truth, and I enjoy finding such truths to use in my practice of minimalism. One gains by removing unimportant stuff and loses by adding unimportant stuff. Lao Tzu's writing style is spare and without excess words, exactly as if he removed all the less important verbiage. Do you think he practiced minimalism?
Oh, Rebecca, I love this question. Never have I associated a modern movement like minimalism with Tao, but it handshakes so well with the most central Tao concept of Wu Wei, or wise action, early retirement of action. Doing and possessing less leads to having more, not more stuff, but possessing only the necessary leads, paradoxically, to a richer and more textured life. So Taoism reminds us that we are more like travelers through the world, not everlasting residents. So this less is more teaching is a spiritual practice across the ages and across the spiritual traditions. It is contentment with what one has without that needless addition or multiplication of stuff. The Baha'i scripture contains this verse: "Put away all covetousness and seek contentment, for the covetous hath ever been deprived, and the contenteth hath ever been loved and praised." Now the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, "Miserable is the one who is a worshiper of the dinar and the dirham, or money, the one who is after the velvet and the long clothing. If he is given of them, he will be satisfied. However, if he is not given from them, he will not be pleased." Now, going over to Buddhism, Buddha's entire program is a reduction of attachments. Attachments to thoughts, attachment to things and habits. And reducing these desires brings peace and enlightenment. Hinduism agrees. In Bhagavad Gita 2.70, "A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enters like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the person who strives to satisfy such desires." Christianity joins this choir as well, Matthew 6:19-21, where Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So, Rebecca, many world faiths agree about a minimalist point of view. One sheds the unnecessary. Why? To focus upon the necessary. My commentary on this is that when we humans, when on the addictive drug of ego, are not ready to discern a most important question, what is the difference between wants and needs? And Rebecca, Taoism is like this too. We've talked about Wu Wei hundreds of times in this podcast. We've had an entire session devoted just to, quote, early retirement, unquote, of our needless desires. Because nature has an early retirement system as well. No storm, no earthquake, no season, no spell of good or bad luck lasts forever. Therefore, we focus upon Tao's resilience to help us discern what is rooted and therefore permanent and what is temporary and can be given away. Even Tao Te Ching's verses are minimalist. 81 verses, only 5,000 words, or about 62 words per verse. And here's a few of the Tao Te Ching's minimalist teachings. Verse 19, interrupt sanctified holiness, forsake sophistication. People are 100 times happier without all these contrivances. Interrupt the rules of family devotion and discard those exhausting ancestral duties. People will naturally recover what family means. Interrupt cunning, forget profit. Notice how theft diminishes. These three interruptions are just the beginning. Your goal is peace and your essence. And here's what's next. Discern the simplicity of everything like raw silk. Embrace the uncomplicated and unvarnished nature of things like an uncarved block of wood. Become smart by reducing self-interest and control. Practice wise self-interruption and break the complication habit. Next, verse 48, which is coming up in a few weeks. Tao's math. Pursuing knowledge, your routine is multiplication. Pursuing Tao, it is subtraction. Prune, lose, diminish, keep subtracting until there's no doer, no pursuing. With no pursuit and not doing, pure action shows itself. But keep your thumb on the scale and it's meddling upon meddling. Get out of your own way and rejoin Tao's way. Verse 59 also emphasizes the idea of letting go of unnecessary baggage. The way to endure, part two. Whether governing people or serving heaven, nothing works better than restraint. Practicing restraint, one prepares for the future. Then verse 64, beginnings, part two. It is easier to manage undeveloped things. When something has not yet emerged, it's easy to manage. Undeveloped things are the easiest to disrupt. Trifling matters disperse best. Resolve things, therefore, before they become unsolvable. Order your affairs before chaos happens, and it will. And I love verse 80 near the end of Tao Te Ching. It says like this, even if you possess labor-saving devices to increase your economy by 10 or 100 times, do not use them. Let them all decay. Limit your travels. Consider only the value of your lives here and now, where they are. May your boats and wheeled vehicles have nowhere to go and so fall into neglect. The same for armor and weapons. No displays, no uses, just dust collectors. Delight in your food. Appreciate the simple beauty of your clothes. Find enchantment at your hearth and discover your joy in a modest life. So, Rebecca, you've helped us isolate, I think, a key theme in nearly every spirituality of our world. It's also present in Taoism. There's this natural urge, I believe, in us, a natural urge to be humble, to acquire less, to think of others more, though this urge can be overcome by living on ego gas in our material world. So yes, Lao Tzu would be a good friend and ally of the minimalist movement today. While I cannot call him something he had no knowledge of, that is minimalism, we can certainly add his wonderful voice to the choir of spiritualities singing from the minimalist songbook. Now, Rebecca, did I answer or respond to your question? Do you have any comebacks?
No, I think you nailed it, Mark.
Well, thanks for being here today. Thank you so much for being our voice today, and I look forward to talking with you more. This podcast is an original labor of love, designed, written, and co-produced by many, whose central idea is that Tao Te Ching is good news for today. Tao still speaks. Rebecca Askew's voice centered our episode this week. The ever-harmonizing Audrey Davis is our valued artist. Molly Hartwell sings her balancing song, Put Your Roots Down. Fortress Press holds the copyright for quotations from my Tao Te Ching translation. Thank you to you, Yin and Yang listeners, for your attendance in our class today on Taoism. May your days arise in peace and your nights fall into radical hope.